The following is a 1500 ESPN Twin Cities production.
Raised on basketball, raised in front of a computer screen, raised for covering the game, raised by Wolves. Now, talking all things Timberwolves with beat writer Derek James, here's Benny Hill with the Raised by Wolves podcast.
All right, we're back after after a week off.
Apparently we're feeling nice and smooth, too.
Yeah, nice and smooth. We're back on the Raised by Wolves podcast after a week off. Kind of a quiet week around Timberwolves land. But, of course, Jamal Crawford, it's official. He's a member of the team now. They made it official earlier this week. And he's here. Team has a little bit more depth.
Well, he's not here with us, but he's with the team in that.
Yeah. Let me make sure I'm not throwing anybody off. We do have a guest this week, and very excited to have this guest on with us. But yeah, it's not Jamal Crawford. We don't have Jamal Crawford here. Would be good. Would be kind of cool to have him on though. Before this,
I heard him
started.
On with Mackie and Judd, and he was fantastic.
Yeah. He's great. I've always liked Jamal Crawford. He's always been one of those guys that's fun to watch. I mean, that obviously at 37, he's not what he was, you know, maybe 5-6 years ago, but those half court shots, man, at the buzzer at the end of the first quarter or first half, it's those are always fun. Our guest this week, very excited to have him on with us.
Not working solo tonight.
Yeah, not working solo. He's actually on the air with someone with him, which is kind of a rare thing. He's usually you usually hear him doing Timberwolves games on the radio. He's been the radio play-by-play man for the Wolves for, is this your 11th season, Alan Horton?
You are right on the mark, Manny. Yeah, this will be season number 11.
Does it feel like it's been 11?
It really doesn't. No, I feel like it's flown by. But then when you start to think about it, and you think of all the head coaches and all the players that have kind of cycled through over the years, then you start to realize, huh, it actually feels more like, you know, 15 to 16 years, I think. With some of the lean years that the Wolves have had. But I think, you know, as you mentioned with Jamal Crawford coming aboard and all the moves the team has made in the offseason, I feel like that those days are behind us. It is just going to be there's a new level of excitement looking forward.
Yeah, it seems like I know when we go back to the 2013 offseason when, you know, Peck got the new contract and, you know, Kevin Martin came in and, you know, we brought Corey Brewer back and there was some expectations of playoff aspirations there. But obviously that team didn't live up to the expectations that I think a lot of people had. But this year, this offseason feels a little bit different, doesn't it?
No, there's no doubt about it. I mean, when you pull off the biggest, you know, acquisition in franchise history in acquiring Jimmy Butler. I mean, the Wolves have been a part of some big trades, but normally it's the names going out, not coming in. Kevin Garnett, obviously, to the Celtics, and Kevin Love going to the Cavaliers. But this time the Wolves kind of flip it, and they're bringing in the premier talent. And I think Jimmy Butler is right up there. You know, he's arguably one of the top three two-way players in the NBA, and he's just he checks almost every box that you're looking for. In adding a guy, including already having played under Tom Thibodeau's system, knows him extremely well, knows the staff very well, now knows his point guard very well. With Taj Gibson, I was going to make the comparison of Jamal Crawford has already played with Jeff Teague. So you got a lot of connections already built in on this team. So, you know, when you pull off a trade like that and then you make some free agent acquisitions around those that move, I think there's real reason for optimism.
You know, Alan, we were talking in the media room on draft night. Jace Frederick of the Pioneer Press brought this up. Jimmy Butler trade has to be the biggest acquisition in franchise history, right? We couldn't even think of anything close to it.
No, without doubt. No, I mean, like I said, the other two trades were talent going the other way, and this time it's a complete reversal. And you think about it, if that trade hadn't been made, you know, you just continue to go down this road. If you hadn't acquired Jimmy Butler, you still got Zach LaVine. You make that number 7 pick, and you're just kind of, yes, the guys are developing and they're getting a year better, but you look at what else is happening around the NBA landscape, and you just feel like you're falling further and further behind. You need balance to your roster, and so now all of a sudden, you plug Jimmy Butler in with Andrew Wiggins and Karl Anthony Towns. You've got, you finally got someone who's experienced, who's been through the battles, gotten to the playoffs, had success there. Has been a premier offensive, a defensive player, can kind of lead the way, has played for Tibbs, knows what he wants. You've now kind of got that balance to this roster. And then when you bring in Jeff Teague and you bring in Taj Gibson and Jamal Crawford, you just add to the list. I think there's a really nice mix now for what I was talking about with balance on this roster.
I'm sure we'll get back to the on-court and the roster stuff in a second, but I just wanted to ask you, you know, with the, you know, there's a rebrand with the new jerseys, new logo, revamped Target Center, and now this excitement with the roster. I mean, what an exciting time for the franchise and for the fans of this team. I mean, I can't think of, you know, I remember when they first made the playoffs and that was exciting, but this is really the first time in a long, long time that I think the Timberwolves really just have, you know, our true fresh start and something to really look forward to all the way around.
Well, there's only one thing left to do, and that's win games. And make the postseason. You're right. I mean, you've got a new scoreboard from last year. You got the new jerseys, a new court, renovated arena. You've still got the, you know, moving over to Mayo Clinic Square and the practice facility there, acquiring the D-League team. There's nothing else you can do as a franchise. The last thing to do is put it all together on the floor and win games. And I think, you know, like you said, that you've got the best chance to do that in a long, long time.
You talk about Jimmy Butler and Taj Gibson, of course, and I know me and Derek and Steve McPherson, too, before he left us back in February, we talked about throughout the season, one of the things that was kind of missing was, obviously, Tom Thibodeau is, I mean, and you see it, you know, being, you know, traveling with the team all the time. We could hear Tom Thibodeau on the floor. We can hear him barking out signals, and he's, you know, he's trying to communicate with the guys, but they didn't really have a guy on the floor who could really communicate and interpret what Tibbs was saying to them on the floor and be sort of that on the floor sort of filter to communicate with the young guys. And now it seems like with Jimmy and with Taj, two guys that have played with Tibbs in the past, they can be able to do that for them.
Yeah, especially at those crucial moments. I mean, that was one of the big things with the Wolves, right, is not being able to close out leads, 10-point leads, 15-point leads, not executing down the stretch. That's where you need that experience and everyone, a calming effect out there where Jimmy Butler and Taj Gibson, you're right, can read what Tibbs wants. Hey, let's calm down. Let's execute. Let's stop that other team's 8-0 run before it gets to be 14-2 and all of a sudden, you know, that 10-point lead is gone. Or, you know, especially with some of the rule changes in the NBA this year as in regards to timeouts, there aren't going to be as many timeouts anymore. And you're going to have to rely on your guys on the floor to get you through some difficult stretches. I think this is a really big story that really hasn't been talked about too much in the offseason is, you know, coaches have become master manipulators of using the media timeouts, using their extra timeouts. And we saw Tibbs have to burn through all of his timeouts during games this past season, trying to keep it close to just give himself a chance down the stretch. But it seems like every coach these days, as soon as a team goes on an 8-0 run, they're calling a timeout. Well, now with less timeouts at their disposal, they can't really afford to do that anymore. Now it's going to be up to the guys on the floor to interpret what the coach wants without that timeout and be able to execute. I think that becomes a really big story heading into this next season because the Wolves now have that experience and they didn't have it last year.
Yeah, and it seems like with Jimmy and Taj being in the mix too, like it just seems like Tibbs is not going to have to call as many of those timeouts because, I mean, we saw all through last year where, you know, a team would go on an 8-0 or 10-0 run in the matter of 90 seconds or 2 minutes, and Tibbs has to burn two, sometimes even three timeouts in like a five-minute span because he's just got this young roster that just doesn't have the experience yet.
And then somehow they'd keep it close until the end, but then you've got no timeouts down the stretch. And then that hurts you, especially if you're playing catch-up and you can't play the foul and extend the game and move the ball up into the front court when you have those 20-second timeouts. And so the 20-second timeout is gone. It's just weird to think of how many years you've been hearing 20-second timeouts and that shoulder touching. That thing's gone now. It's just wiped out in the NBA. It's kind of a sad day. But, I think the Wolves are much better positioned to execute in these type of situations. And, hey, how about this? I was talking about this in Las Vegas with a bunch of – we had the NBA broadcast meetings with Summer League and everything. And a couple of people were talking about how, you know, hey, if you're Denver and there are now only two timeouts per quarter, you're at elevation. We know guys go in there often on a back-to-back and you're sucking wind. If you're Denver, why not burn a couple of timeouts at the beginning of a quarter, at the third quarter, maybe fourth, whatever, and force your opponent to now play the fight? You know, you call them way early at the 11-minute mark and the 10-minute mark, And all of a sudden, you've got to play, you know, you got to play 10 straight minutes without a timeout unless you're willing to burn one. It's a real, I think it changes the strategy of the game, and it could play a big factor in places like Denver and Utah where you play in some altitude.
Now, considering the Timberwolves are in the same division and figured to be pretty competitive with them, Mike Malone wasn't sitting in on those interviews, was he, or on those conversations?
Well, I don't know. And George Karl probably would have been behind this idea because he would love to push the pace and run you out of the gym up there at altitude. But it's real when you go there. I mean, I feel it just walking up to our broadcast spot which is actually at the lower part of the second deck. It's high up there, and it has an effect on guys. And you occasionally see guys sucking on some oxygen. So it could be a strategy. I don't know where Mike Malone comes out on that. So maybe now with Paul Millsap now, he's almost pushing 40. So maybe he doesn't want to run him too much into the ground.
Yeah, we talk about Denver. You know, what do you think of the rest of the division now? I mean, Utah, obviously they lose Gordon Hayward, but they get Ricky Rubio in a trade. And obviously you've been around Ricky a while the last 6 years. Portland is still there. They have Damian Lillard and C.J. McCollum, so those guys are always going to be tough to deal with. Denver obviously getting Millsap.
OKC getting Paul George.
Yeah, and Oklahoma City. I mean, Jimmy Butler is the big splash for the Wolves, but then Oklahoma City comes around and trades for Paul George. This division's going to be it's going to be pretty competitive again.
Yeah, because you're going to get a full season in Portland with Nurkic working with Lillard and McCollum, and they had a ton of success at the end of last year, pushing to that number 8 seed. And just imagine if Hayward had decided to stay in Utah. I mean, what talent you've got in the division. I mean, that's just murderer's row every night. But, you know, the weird thing about the NBA is it's the one league that doesn't emphasize their divisions very much. I mean, you're only playing those teams four times. You're playing, oftentimes we play Phoenix or San Antonio four times, or the Clippers or the Lakers. You know, you're guaranteed to play those teams four times, but it's not really enough. Every other, you know, in baseball, you're playing your division all the time. And in football, the percentage is pretty two out of your, you know, you're playing the Packers twice. You're playing, you know, you play your division foes about almost close to 50% of your games, right? So it's really the one league where you don't play your division opponents very much. And, you know, and everybody keeps talking. I hear fans all the time say, well, how do you compete with Golden State? Well, you know, I'm not sure you have to. Look, you're going to play them only three or four times over 82 games.
Yeah.
So you worry about Golden State if and when you're facing them in the postseason. And if you're in the postseason, well, then you've checked a couple of other boxes, even if you lose that series. But you kind of worry about that when you get there.
You know, the thing I like that the NBA as a whole did, all the teams, you know, we were all kind of worried, you know, what are teams going to do with the Warriors, you know, clearly being the favorites for the next few years. Nobody really rested on their laurels. I mean, the teams that could stockpiled. And it's kind of cool to see that. And I think one thing going back to Utah, I mean, they lost Gordon Hayward, but they added a lot of solid depth pieces. I'm not saying they're better without Gordon Hayward.
Right.
But with the pieces they were able to add, I mean, it just seems, you know, by committee, they're still going to be a formidable team.
Yep. I think you can look up and down every team's roster. I mean, Houston is going for it. Even the Clippers losing Chris Paul, I mean, they get Gallinari back. That's at least something in return. If Gallinari can ever stay healthy in a year, I'm a big fan of his, at least at the offensive end. Even teams like Sacramento, you know, you'd think maybe they would just be in sort of tanking and rebuilding mode, but they go out and get Zach Randolph, and they pony up money for George Hill and Vince Carter. I mean, it's just about everybody is trying to make themselves better. And even teams like Phoenix and L.A., the Lakers, you know, they're building. Well, the Lakers got,
ACP.
Pope. I mean, that fell right into their lap. Plus, they've got all the hype around Lonzo Ball. And I think Phoenix has a ton of young players that they feel good about. So almost every team, you can kind of justify what they've done in the offseason. I think it's tremendous, Derek. Yeah, it's a great point. I think nobody has decided just to pack it in for the next 3 years and wait for Golden State to be in the luxury tax for so many years in a row that it finally becomes cost prohibitive for them to keep bringing these guys back.
What do you think of this Lonzo Ball phenomenon? I mean, he's been getting all of this all of this coverage, all of this attention. I mean, his highlights in Summer League were just all over the screen on SportsCenter. I mean, I remember the days of Summer League being in a gym in Vegas somewhere.
Right. Yeah.
And now they're packing full arenas with 15,000 people in attendance.
It's incredible. People make vacation trips out of it, and yeah. It's really cool to be out there during that. I haven't actually gone over and seen a game this past year, but they set attendance records. They set broadcast records. Every single game has been televised, whether it's Vegas, even in Orlando, and in Salt Lake City, too. And what's cool is that there's nobody's building it up to be anything more than it isn't. I mean, everybody realizes, hey, it's just Summer League, and this is a chance to see really the first professional game, even though it won't count. It's not regular season, but it's the first chance to see Lonzo Ball. It's the first chance to see Donovan Mitchell and, Markelle Fultz and all these guys. And I thought so many of them played so well, too. As far as the hype for Lonzo, I'm just so glad it's just perfect that he ended up in L.A. with the Lakers. I mean, that franchise is always just, they dominate Summer League because it's such a quick trip from Los Angeles. The fans are always out there in force. And you know what? The league is a better place when the Lakers and the Knicks and maybe the Bulls, the large markets, when they're involved and when they're headed in the right direction. And it certainly seems like the Lakers are. The attention is just completely overblown, in my opinion. But I'm just glad it's not our team. It's not the Wolves. It's out in the left coast, and fine. You can have the glory. I think there are going to be a lot. I can't wait for the regular season because I think Lonzo's dad has really ticked off a lot of guys in this league, and they are going to go hard at him, and he's going to have some rough nights. I mean, he looks like a very talented player, but he's going to have some rough nights, especially these first few months of his NBA career.
I think one thing with Lonzo that I've almost started to feel bad for him because, you start to see, not just, the hype that his dad puts on him and, starting the petty little squabbles with other people. I mean, you see, SportsCenter tweeted something out, the only players to average is, Russell Westbrook, Oscar Robertson, Lonzo Ball. And it's come on. Or the people talking about, Lonzo Ball is going to be trash. And it's hold on, be fair to the kid. Let's let him play a game.
Yeah, don't do this to the kid.
Yeah, a lot of it's been put on by his dad and the media hype surrounding him. And every time I've heard him speak, he's very well-spoken. And the way he plays is not doesn't match the trash talk that his dad puts out there. He's incredibly unselfish.
He's fun.
He sees the floor extremely well. Arguably he's right up there with a Ricky Rubio in terms of passing ability. Yeah. So his game doesn't really fit all of the trash talking that his dad's been doing.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I know you mentioned the Knicks too, and I think me and Derek were just talking about this a few weeks ago that the NBA is. I mean, the Lakers and Knicks have been bad the last couple of years, and the league has done fine with them being bad. I mean, it's the league hasn't suffered for it. But watching playoff games at Madison Square Garden is fun.
No doubt.
Those postseason games, I'm an NBA nerd, so I go back to those Pacers-Knicks series, those Bulls-Knicks series, those Heat-Knicks series back in the day with Alonzo Mourning and Patrick Ewing and those guys. Watching postseason basketball at MSG is fun. So I mean, it would be nice to see that. Yeah. I think the Knicks are further away at this point than the Lakers are, but
definitely.
But it would be nice to see those teams relevant again because it's fun to see them playing in the postseason and teams trying to beat them.
And the reason those games are so special in the postseason, Manny, is because of the atmosphere in there.
Yeah.
Even though they have been awful the last few years, every time we go in there once a year. The energy in that building and in New York City and in downtown Manhattan is just different than any other arena you go to. And even when they struggle, the way they've got the organ playing and the lights going and the crowd is just so into it, it is one of the it's one of the most fun places to go call a game, but just because of that atmosphere. And then you realize that two teams are matching up are well below 500, and you're thinking, what's going on here? But, these guys go out and they compete hard, and I think the fans, they certainly deserve better in New York. And, with the way the, CBA has gone and the way the cap didn't go up very much this year, it's easy to give the big money to the big players. And for the Timberwolves, it's going to be Wiggins and Towns and Butler. But really where you have to micromanage things, you just have to be so careful about these things, is those other contracts filling out your roster. Mm-hmm. And when you give, you give Tim Hardaway Jr. $71 million when nobody else was offering anything even close to that, that just sinks you in the future when you're paying a guy, whatever that works out to, 16 a year or something, rather than 11. That makes a huge difference. And I think the Timberwolves even saw this offseason. You know, Cole Aldridge came off a really good year with the L.A. Clippers. And I think we found that, you know, when Cole is with a good second unit, he can be effective like he was in L.A. The second unit wasn't effective for a myriad of reasons last year, and he suffered. And now the Wolves are kind of thinking, well, wow, $7 million is an awful lot of the cap to be paying for somebody who's not contributing as much as we thought he was. Now, I still think there's plenty of time to regroup that bench and get Cole a big part of that second unit, and then I think he could be worth that $7 million. But my point is that those other contracts are now paramount, and that's something the Knicks have just struggled with forever. And it just seems like they continue to make these just awful decisions. I mean, here, Tim Hardaway is a guy they had a couple of years ago, and they gave him away. They just gave away J.R. Smith and Amon Shumpert. You can't do that. They gave away Tyson Chandler back in the day. I mean, that was a team that won, like, I don't know, was it 3 years ago? 54 games. And had set the record for most three-pointers in a season with Jason Kidd leading the charge. And then it just all fell apart, and it's been downhill ever since. And it's too bad because I think the fans deserve better.
And to think there were rumors that Phil Jackson was trying to trade Kristaps Porzingis.
Oh, my gosh.
Could you imagine if he would have pulled the trigger on that?
No, that's what you work for, is to get someone like Kristaps Porzingis, and you've got him on his rookie deal. And what has he played, 2 years now? I mean, you're set there. You build around him. You don't throw him away just to get another pick that probably will not be as good as Kristaps Porzingis.
Well, his reasoning was so flimsy for wanting to move him when he was talking about, he skipped his exit interview.
Oh,
like
yeah,
Shaq
didn't
do the same thing 15 years ago to him.
Nobody's ever skipped one of my exit interviews.
Right?
Of course, then it comes out that Shaq missed one. And, you know, it's just that's just been an absolute joke. And it's just it's too bad.
You know, I always want teams to be competent. You don't necessarily have to be good, but at least, you know, competently run, moving in a positive direction one way or the other. And I have to point out, the Knicks didn't just overpay for Tim Hardaway Jr. They overpaid by 50%. The Hawks were offering $48
million
for 4 years. They gave him $71, $73 million.
Yeah.
So they were really negotiating against themselves, really.
Yeah.
Oh, it's unbelievable. And they also, I think, put in things. They give him a fourth-year guaranteed. He may have even gotten, like, a no-trade clause or something weird like that.
I think he was going to get half of his money in October, too.
Yeah, that's one of those things.
Oh, my goodness.
There were so many things. I don't know who the agent is for Tim Hardaway Jr., but he must have just been just stupefied when that call came in. He's like, okay.
He probably just kept
asking all the way to the bank.
Absolutely.
Well, if you look at the Knicks too, they still got Courtney Lee locked up for 3 more years.
Mm-hmm.
They got Joakim Noah locked up for 3 more years.
Oh, yeah,
that might be the worst contract in the league right now. And I'd love Joakim, but you just don't know how much he has left, and that's a pretty hefty cap number that they have. So they're. I mean, you give that money to Tim Hardaway Jr., man, I don't know, man.
Yeah,
and they got to figure out what they're going to do with Carmelo.
You know, Carmelo's under contract for this year, and I think he's got a player option for the following year. And, you know, I think he'll be pushing $30 million at that point, and he might not be able to get more than that. He may opt in, so you may have 2 more years of Carmelo Anthony on that team. So, you know, it's just the future is not – they're sowing their own fate when they continue to make these long-term deals. It's just there's not enough money to go around to make mistakes like that anymore.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
For over 130 years, McCormick has helped you make mom's lasagna to keep her secret recipe alive. Take over taco night. No matter how chaotic your day is, conquer the bake sale, even if you get to it last minute, and craft the perfect Sunday brunch. When it's not even Sunday. Because with McCormick by your side, it's going to be great.
Wanted to ask you about going back to the Wolves here, and you mentioned, you know, adding more depth to the bench. What are your thoughts on the talk about all the shooting with this team that, you know, a lot of people are concerned about, you know, the lack of
elite
level three-point shooting. What are your thoughts on that? Because me and Derek were talking about this before we started taping about, it doesn't at least from a number standpoint, it doesn't seem like the Wolves will be a great three-point shooting team as they're constructed right now, but I don't get the sense that they're going to be bad in that department. What's your take on that?
Yeah, you know, three-point shooting is something that's, you know, in my 10 years, we just, you know, I looked back at it, and the Wolves have only outscored their opponents over the course of the season at the three-point line twice in 28 years. I mean, only twice. And one of those years was the Rick Adelman season in which they outscored their opponents by seven, a grand total of seven three-pointers. So even that one was a microscopic edge for the Wolves. So they have never been prolific at the three-point line. They've never embraced it. They've never gotten guys in that can knock it down. They've never taken advantage of it. And it's become so glaring, obviously, the last few years when you face teams like, well, we mentioned the Knicks a few years ago. So obviously, Golden State, Cleveland, Boston has embraced the three. I mean, it's just you're facing teams that are shooting 35, 40, 45 three-point attempts per game. It's just ludicrous. And even if you're a good defensive team defending the three-point line, you know, when you're facing a team that's shooting 45, they're still percentage-wise going to hit at least, you know, 12 or 15, somewhere in that range.
The math
you may
problem.
Have done a good job on them on those. But, you know, it's interesting. I was thinking about that the last couple of days, and I've been meaning to add these numbers up, and I finally did. So last year, the Wolves hit 601 three-pointers, fewest in the NBA, and they shot at about 35%. And they have 11 players on their roster right now, and if you go by last year's statistics, they would total 602. So they're not by a large margin, but they are ahead of last year's pace, and they still have four roster spots left. So that is encouraging to me, and actually the percentage, from if you add up from last year, would be 36% shooting. I think they're going to be fine percentage-wise, and I think you can make the argument that, hey, I think we're going to see Cat take a one or two more threes a game. I think you're going to see an uptick from Andrew Wiggins, who has progressed in that area in his first 3 years. Might Jimmy Butler shoot a little bit more from beyond the arc? Maybe. And I think Jeff Teague is a guy that's going to probably shoot more threes simply because he's going to find himself off the ball with the ball in Butler's hands, Wiggins' hands, Towns' hands, and he's going to be spotting up. And that's, you know, that's a big reason why he's here and Ricky Rubio is not. I think offensively the thought is that, you know, when you look at the catch-and-shoot numbers that Jeff Teague has, they dwarf Ricky Rubio's. When you look at, you know, wide open shots without a defender within 6 feet, Teague's numbers again dwarf Ricky's from the outside. When you look at effective field goal percentage, and that's where Jeff's going to be key. And if he can sit out there and knock down some threes, I think that'll certainly help. They're still, even if you average 602, you're still going to be last in the league again. But there's still three more roster spots that will likely be filled. I think they'll probably leave that 15th open. But there are some guys out there that I think could still be added. And I think with the uptick from the guys I mentioned, I think you could get yourself towards league average. I mean, that's what you're shooting for, right? I mean, this is about 7.3 threes per game. You've got to add a couple of more to get over nine, I think, to be, you know, you just want to be in that mid-range and shoot it relatively well. And then I think defensively the Wolves will be better in defending the three. So I think that'll shrink that three-point differential gap a little bit.
Well, I think one of the big things, and you really took the words out of my mouth before I even said it, is that guys can just get better. I remember Flip Saunders talking about that when he was asked, you know, well, what can this team do to improve, you know, the shooting? And he's like, well, isn't necessarily about going out and getting guys. It's improving the guys that we already do have so that they can hit shots better. But I also think, too, I mean, like you said, I mean, more volume.
Yeah.
But if you're an average three-point shooting team, I think, too, having, you know, four or five guys who can reliably hit threes.
Yeah.
Because I don't think there's any one of those guys you want to leave wide open consistently.
Right.
So I think that's going to open up the spacing, should open up better lanes, open up the floor a lot more, too.
Yeah. It's interesting, too, because so much of the talk in the NBA is about, you know, gravity, too. How close does your defender have to play to you off the ball because of your ability to knock down a three? And, you know, while the Wolves may not have that, you know, Kyle Korver type guy who's just sitting out there that nobody can leave because you know he's going to knock it down, I think once you start to hit a couple, even one or two, well, then a guy's got to come out and play Jeff Teague a little bit closer. They got to come out and play Andrew Wiggins a little bit tighter. And like you said, Derek, that just opens up the floor. And that's what this offense needs because they've got guys that have really dynamic offensive games, whether it's Wiggins or Butler or Towns. Gorgie can try to find his role. Maybe Gorgie steps up and you know, we saw him towards the end of last year get comfortable with that corner three. Maybe he does that for the full season. Maybe he's taken two or three shots.
He takes those all the time in warm-ups, too.
He does. And he practices them. And I forget who it was last year. Was it Wiggins or Levine who had said that, hey, we feel comfortable anytime Gorgie, that's a shot he knocks down all the time in practice, all the time pregame. And I think he's finally developed a comfort level taking those in the game. So you could see him average maybe a made three a game, which would be, you know, that's not a tremendous amount, but when you're talking about trying to find your way toward a league average, every little bit helps.
Wanted to ask you about Ricky Rubio. You were around him for the last 6 years.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people were upset with the trade. A lot of fans were upset with the trade because, I mean, let's face it, Ricky was such a fan favorite here, and he's a good player, so it's not like he's just one of those guys that can't play and people were just fell in love with. But obviously, you know, you got the sense that Tom Thibodeau and this coaching staff and the organization wanted to go in a different direction with the point guard position and have somebody who can play off the ball a little bit more. But with that said, just what are your thoughts on Ricky as he's now departed and moved on to Utah?
Yeah, I mean, sad to see him go because I think, like you said, man, he's a fan favorite, and he was, without a doubt, during my stretch, the most fun guy to call. I mean, that's just, you know, I learned early on when he showed up as a rookie in 20, that strike-shortened, lockout-shortened season in 11-12, you couldn't take your eyes off the floor. I would normally look down at some papers or notes after a made field goal, and I quickly realized that I was missing stuff because Ricky was pushing the ball up the floor and making passes that nobody else was making. So I eventually put my notes up on a riser so they were kind of lifted up in front of me so I could always have my eyes on the floor while still looking at a note. And he, you know, going back to that 2011-12 season, remember the, because it was, there was only one preseason game, and I think, yep, it was, if not a sellout, close to a sellout against Milwaukee. And Ricky was just sensational, not necessarily in that game, but that rookie year. And, you know, he started coming off the bench, then they started him. And when he went down with that knee injury against the Lakers in March, it was, you know, one or two games out of a playoff spot. You really got the feeling that that group could have made a run to the postseason. It's funny, I saw Wayne Ellington. He was on our pregame show earlier this year in Miami. And I said, you know, I know it's a long time ago, Wayne, but you think back to Ricky's rookie season, that 11-12 season, you know, did you guys feel like you had something building? And he agreed. He thought they could have made the postseason. They had the right mix of players, and Ricky was a huge part of that. And I think when, you know, you look at the Timberwolves franchise, I mean, Ricky's going to be one of those icon-type guys that played here. And it's just, I think it was finally time. I was glad to see finally something happen after having his name mentioned for so long. I mean, every trade deadline, every draft day, it seems like his name was being, I mean, he even said at one point, it already feels like I've been traded. So I am happy that he's in a good situation in Utah. And I think, Manny, you said it well. I think what it basically comes down to is that Tom Thibodeau felt like this was a better fit for what he wants. And so you could argue, you know, is Jeff better than Ricky in certain areas? Yes. Is Ricky better than Jeff in certain areas? Yes. How about the contract situation? How about the money per year? How about the age? All those things. You could argue that, but it really comes down to what Tom Thibodeau wants from his point guard. And I think what Jeff brings at the offensive end was the difference maker. And, you know, so with that being said, I love Ricky. I love his work ethic. I love his attitude. I think he just makes people better on the floor. And so I think the Wolves will miss him in certain areas. But again, you know, Jeff Teague is going to bring some more things at the offensive end that I think Tom Thibodeau wants. So I wish Ricky the best. And, you know, it is a little frustrating, too, that, you know, he just never was able to develop that shot into, you know, a league average type shot. Because had he been able to do that, you know, he'd probably still be here. And he just missed too many off seasons, in my opinion. He blew out the knee, then he had the ankle. Those are two off seasons.
Yeah.
And really the rest of those he spent playing with his Spanish national team, which he loves to do, and that's, there's nothing wrong with that. But when you are lacking in one of the fundamental areas of the game, which comes down to shooting, you know, you can talk to shooting coaches. They can't fix everything in one session or 1 week. They need months and continuous months. And Ricky was just never able, in my opinion, able to dedicate that time to kind of either remake his shot, retool it, do whatever, tweak it, do whatever you had to do to get it to be more consistent. And that just never happened.
And I feel like with Rubio, you know, and yeah, he was always a fantastic guy. You were never going to hear anyone say anything bad about him when he was leaving. I mean, win or lose, he always spoke.
Mm-hmm.
It was a loss. You know, he wasn't always the most chipper, but you wouldn't expect that. But I feel like we heard those some rumblings, you know, of him possibly, you know, wanting out, you know, if they weren't winning. And it just really seems like to have your name constantly floated in trade rumors while your team isn't making the playoffs.
Really, ever since
really
he was,
annoying.
And really, let's be honest, ever since Ricky was drafted in 2009, his name surfaced in trade rumors. I mean, Knicks fans.
I think the reason it bothered him so much is because he cares.
Yeah.
He cares. And I remember talking to him his rookie year, and I was asking about the Spanish national team and kind of the brotherhood he's formed with those guys. I mean, he loves those guys. Those guys all get together whenever they match up against each other, whether it's Marc Gasol, Pau Gasol, Jose Calderon, anybody on that Spanish national team he's so tight with. They get together in the cities that they're traveling to. And he wanted to really bring that to the NBA, and I think that was kind of disappointing for him in the sense that you can't really build that. It's very rare to build that in the NBA because you have so many individual interests rather than just the team interests when you're talking about a national team. So his head and heart is in the right place. And it had to be frustrating hearing those things for so long.
Well, I think, you know, you talk about, you know, wanting to build that brotherhood and, you know, all that. And I think I remember the last Kevin Love season, 2014, and just going into that locker room and just how tense and almost uncomfortable it was because it was silent. Nobody was joking around. There really wasn't that camaraderie until, you know, he's traded for Wiggins. Kevin Love's traded for Wiggins. And then they draft Zach LaVine. And then all of a sudden these guys, you know, like they're playing Call of Duty together off the court. They're really best friends, and it really felt like that locker room since then, you know, with Ricky is probably the closest thing he's had to that.
Yeah, I would agree. And that, you know, the Wolves did have something there. I mean, obviously injuries played a monster part in this, but, you know, Kevin Love, Nikola Pekovic, and Ricky Rubio, they were together for 3 years, and, I mean, they only started about 60-something games together, whether it was Love getting hurt or Ricky or, of course, Pekovic towards the end. But they were an effective team when those three guys were able to play. Obviously, it's a pretty small sample size, not even half a season, but they were something like, you know, close to 10 games over 500 when those guys started. And that's saying something because those teams didn't win a whole lot. And they just were never able to kind of put it all together. And it's too bad because I think, you know, watching Ricky do what he – you know, here's something interesting, guys. If you notice that – I was thinking about this recently when Ricky got traded, that, you know, the flashy passes, not that they mean anything, you know, it's 2 points no matter how you get the ball there, but those really haven't been on display the last couple of years. I feel like those have dipped. It used to be two or three times a game, and then it was kind of two or three times a week, and now maybe once a week. And I don't know if there's anything to that. Is it the style of play? Is it different head coaches he's played for? Is it the talent around him? Is it his physical ability? Maybe the ankle and the knee has slowed him just a bit. But yeah, that was one thing that jumped out to me is we really didn't see as many flashy passes that we saw early on in his career.
Well, it's not like he was a turnover machine when he was making all those flashy passes either.
No.
Right.
If memory serves me right. And I feel like around after Flip passed and when Sam was in, like, I think that's when I kind of first noticed the, you know, the dip in the flashy passes that we all came to love.
Yeah.
And I think if you're Ricky too, and you just over the course of the last 6 years, I mean, he's had how many head coaches? He had Adelman.
Yeah.
And even in the last year of Adelman, you know, Rick missed some games, obviously, with the situation with his wife.
He's had as many head coaches as I have in my time being credentialed by the Timberwolves. The exact same amount.
Yeah, I mean, he's had four in the last 4 years, and then I think this year will be number five. And so not only is it, he's had to prove himself to each one of those coaches. He always seems to have to prove himself to these guys. And I think as a point guard, it's an even tougher adjustment, adjusting to a new system, because you not only have to know your role, but you've got to be that coach on the floor. You've got to know his system and what he wants and what he needs at all times and know everybody else's role. And I think that's one of the reasons why Ricky played so well in the second half is that, well, he had, you know, that elbow injury, I think, early on, and that finally healed. And then I think he understood the system better. I think he knew what coach wanted to do. And that's one of the reasons for his success, you know, the second half of the season. I think one other thing that kind of frustrates me about Ricky, and I don't know how much we can put on this, on him, as the team has really struggled. I looked this up during his 6 years. Timberwolves in clutch time, their clutch time win percentage never ranked better than 23rd. I mean, they're 23rd or lower all six of those seasons. And, you know, so he's injured for part of those, so you can't put them all on him, but he is the floor general out there. And they're just, there were, there weren't many games that I can recall where he really carried the team. Not carried the team in the sense of having to score, but being the floor general, making the right decisions, not driving in for a layup and going, you know, a million miles an hour and just not having that touch around the rim that we've really wanted him to develop over the years. I think there's some questions there in clutch time too. I think some of the burden has to fall on him, with his decision making in clutch time.
Well, I think some of that too. I remember someone did a video breakdown. I mean, it could have been Zach Harper or someone, because he did a lot of that. But it was a breakdown of a game where someone was inbounding the ball, and nobody was covering Rubio behind the three-point line because nobody had any reason to care at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone stacked on Kevin Love because, well, who are you going to worry about, Kevin Love or Ricky Rubio?
Right.
And I think that's part of the problem. One thing that'll be interesting to see if that gets better, if guys can get better shots now that, you know, like I said before, they have four or five reliable shooters on the floor.
Yeah, I mean, this day and age, that becomes so glaring. And you're right. I think that that inability to knock down a shot or create really hurts you in close games and in down the stretch. And that's just, you know, I think right before he injured his ankle a couple of years ago in Orlando.
Oh, yeah.
There was a game, I think it was the previous game in Brooklyn, where the Timberwolves played really well down the stretch. And I remember this because I said it on the air that I thought Ricky played his best game in the final 5 minutes of a close game. Like his decision making was pinpoint. His defensive awareness was tremendous. He even though he didn't, you know, score all the points down the stretch, he was setting guys up. He was the floor general. He was doing all the things I was just talking about that I don't think we've seen on a consistent basis. And I just remember thinking that was one of his best games in clutch time that we've seen. And then there just haven't been many games like that.
You know, I remember that Orlando game and watching it. Ricky was, because I wrote about this a ton in the months after too. Ricky was shooting like 43-44% when he rolled his ankle.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was just never the same when he came back at all. And that was unfortunate.
And I really thought that, you know, I don't know the intricacies of injuries and stuff like that, but that was a lost season. Not only was it a lost season, but then he didn't have surgery until the end of the year, which just killed his off season. And I think you're right, Derek. That he was off to, I mean, it was only, what, five, six, seven games. It was really
early.
Yeah,
it was like five.
But it was, I thought he was off to a great start to the season, and that Brooklyn game was a part of that. And then the next game, of course, Orlando, he goes down and just, you know, a freak kind of thing where you just kind of roll your ankle. And it'll be really interesting how well he fits in Utah. You know, Utah's one of the slowest teams in the NBA, and one of the things Ricky does well is pushing the pace and getting up and down the floor. I don't know if Quinn Snyder's willing to kind of loosen the reins a little bit. He hasn't been since his time there, as their roster has turned over. So it's going to be really interesting because they, you know, they work the shot clock too. And so whose hands did the ball end up in at the end of the shot clock? It's normally the point guard, and that's not a situation I think where Ricky's going to have in those particular possessions is going to have a ton of success.
I think one thing that'll help Ricky's morale in Utah is that it seems like he's already very well welcomed. He was in on the Gordon Hayward interviews. I mean, the Jazz have really had a good amount of fanfare for him. I think to have that welcoming after so much uncertainty for Manny, like you said, the last 8 years straight, could go a long way. But yeah, I do see that problem there when you have the guy at the end of the shot clock and it's the point guard. You know, they don't have that George Hill guy who can hit 40% from three anymore.
Well, yeah, and George Hill, when he was healthy, bailed them out a ton at the end of shot clocks, and now you don't even have Gordon Hayward to throw it to and create at the end of a shot clock. So. And I think you're right, and it appears that France and Spain have come together in Rudy Gobert and Ricky Rubio. I know they had some war of words on Twitter a few years ago, and some of those battles have been pretty heated between France and Spain. But those guys were sitting, I think, courtside for Salt Lake City Summer League. But it was amazing that after that trade, they got Ricky right over there and flew him down to San Diego to be a part of that meeting with Hayward, who has said that he's a big Ricky fan. And that must have been pretty cool, pretty whirlwind trip a couple days for Ricky. But I think he's going to feel wanted there. It's a great atmosphere, great fan base, and you know Ricky's on a very reasonable deal too. So if Utah doesn't get off to the start they're looking for, they want to go in a different direction. If it's not a good fit, I think Ricky could find himself on the move again at some point.
Poor Ricky.
And he's just like the nicest guy. I mean, yeah. I root for that guy. I get behind him. I supported
Absolutely.
Him for the 6 years he was here. I wanted him to succeed. I think all of us did. Because you want good things to happen to good guys, and he certainly fits that bill.
You know, if he didn't miss 2.5 seasons worth of games, I think he easily would have had Pooh's records, every single one of them,
yeah.
in the assist column.
Yeah, it's amazing how quickly he was moving up in those assist categories and steals and all sorts of stuff. It's too bad, but it's you kind of move on, and I feel good for Ricky. This is finally behind him, and hopefully both teams can move on.
What's the rest of your summer look like, sir?
Well, we seem to have all these press conferences all the time, whether it's Taj Gibson or Jimmy Butler or Jeff Teague and Jamal Crawford the other day.
Yeah.
You mentioned Jamal Crawford being on with Mackey and Judd. I had never gotten a chance to talk to Jamal. I met him at the press conference the other day. You could sit down and talk for hours with this guy. He's so well-spoken. You wouldn't know he's a guy that's 17 years in the league and 37 yeah. years old. I'm really excited. He seems excited, too, to put last year behind him, too. I mean, he only averaged 12 points a game. It was one of his lowest totals in, over a decade. And I think he's looking to bounce back. He doesn't think that time will catch up to him anytime soon, so that hopefully works in the Timberwolves' favor. But it'll be interesting to see how they fill out the rest of this roster. Just it's obviously going to have to be minimum-type guys. But there's still some guys out there. And, we were talking about three-point shooting. You know, a guy we had here before, just for a short period of time, that's available that, I don't know, it would intrigue me for his ability to get hot shooting from the outside is Gerald Green. And I've never heard anybody really mention his name, but...
He's come up a little.
I don't know. I talking to him in Phoenix a few years ago, he is a different person. Because when he was with the Wolves, and I don't remember what year that was, it must have been, he came over from the Boston trade, so that would have been...
The KG trade, yeah.
But he was gone, I think, pretty quickly after that. He couldn't string a coherent sentence together back in 07 and 08. And 5 years later, after he was out of the league, I think played in China or Europe somewhere, and then came back and bounced around, he was as well-spoken and thoughtful, and you could just tell that he had matured, and which makes sense. I mean, he was a 20-year-old kid at the time, and now he's, 26, 27, somewhere in that range, probably a couple of years older. But, sometimes we forget that these guys are just kids, and they have mm-hmm. to take time to develop too. But it's weird because Gerald Green has kind of fallen. You haven't heard him too much the last couple of years, even though he had that big year in Phoenix a couple of years ago.
You know, my only problem with Gerald Green is his lack of discernment when it comes to shot selection. He's never met a shot he didn't like.
It's, shot selection has not been a strong suit. Defense hasn't been a strong suit. Remember, he got burned here. He got burned at Target Center a couple of years ago. I want to say it was Andre Kirilenko going backdoor to Chase Buttinger, and I think it was it against Phoenix, though? I don't know where Green – I thought it was Green who got caught not falling asleep on Buttinger, who just went backdoor and laid it in to win the game at the buzzer.
You know, that might have been this – there was another game, too, in Minnesota. It was like a Sunday afternoon game, because that seems like when all the Suns games are in Minneapolis now.
Yeah.
And –
it's a league rule now. They've changed it, yeah.
It's a weird CBA clause. I don't know why they put it in there.
Yeah.
But he hit this buzzer beater shot, and it's like, that's the thing with him. I mean, if you can have your backup shooting guard, your eighth man off the bench or whatever, that comfortable taking that big of a shot, I mean, I think there is something to be said for that.
Yeah. No, he's not the perfect player, that's for sure. But, when you've got limited choices there to fill out the roster, you're trying to find something. And the Wolves need to find something, because one thing we saw last year with the bench, there was nobody that could kind of steal you a game, could get hot, and you could ride to victory. There were games, I remember watching Utah in the playoffs, and obviously different scenario there, and Joe Johnson has got a ton of years of experience, but he carried them. He carried them in three or four games and won them games.
Mm-hmm.
They even had a game in Atlanta where Shelvin Mack came out of nowhere to have a big fourth quarter. And I don't know why I'm so focused on the Jazz, but something like that. The Wolves need a spark. I think they've got somebody in Jamal Crawford that could do that. But it'd be nice to find somebody who might be able to just win you a couple of games, which if you're going to be fighting for a playoff spot and maybe even playoff seeding, that could turn out to be huge.
You know, like with Joe Johnson, I remember, I saw exactly what you saw this spring when they were playing the Clippers.
Yeah.
Things were starting to get out of hand, and Joe just took the ball, And,
huge.
Yep, just calmed him down and kept him in the game, and that was a big deal. And I think it's funny when people talk about, well, Wiggins and LaVine and Towns, they played too many minutes. And it's like, who would you sit them for at this point? There was nobody they could count on.
Yeah.
And I think you were talking about Cole earlier. I mean, maybe it was due to the combination of the bench unit, but he's a fine backup center in the right environment with the right players around him, but he was often too slow to really be able to be that effective, and I don't think they could play him much more than they did.
Yep. You need the your big three are going to carry the way, but you know Joe Johnson wasn't one of their big three. You had George Hill, you had Gordon Hayward, you had Rudy Gobert, and that's when you need some other options and guys that can just win you a game here or there. And that's something the Wolves really haven't had in a long time is a solid bench unit. I mean, we talked about that 1 year 13-14 when the Wolves went 40-42. That was about as lopsided as almost last year as far as starters versus bench production. I remember Rick just riding those starters, and then he'd go all five bench guys to start the second quarter, and you're just like,
hockey line changes.
Alexei Shved coming in with, I don't know if JJ must have been running that second unit. I think he was. Just not a good fit. And 82 games, it's tough to It is tough to make the postseason if you don't have some quality off the bench that can give you some minutes. I mean, that's the other thing too. Just keep the whatever the score might be. If you can keep it, a zero sum game when the bench comes in, then you feel like you've won. But the problem is, Tibbs went to his bench and all of a sudden whatever lead they had was gone. Or if they were trailing, the deficit grew and you've got to come back to guys. And you're just thinking, man, this is such a long season. It's such a grind that is just such a I think that wore on Towns and it wore on Wiggins, especially at the defensive end of the floor, where they had they were so focused on carrying so much of a load offensively that I think the Wolves' defense really struggled.
I cannot wait for Alan Horton to be calling Timberwolves playoff games next April. It's going to be pretty exciting.
With you, Manny. I can't wait to Let's tip this thing off. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I think. With all the things we touched on with the roster and the arena and the new look and the new team and all this kind of stuff, it's going to be. Let's hope it all comes together and we've got lots of good things to talk about. Because the media that covers the Wolves is some of the best in the NBA. Whether it's blogging, whether it's on radio, whether it's podcasting, and it'd be really nice to be able to dissect things on get into the minutia where it matters. I break down so many. I have so many stats going into a game, and for so many years, those things would just be tossed right out the window. I mean, clutch time really doesn't matter when you're winning 15 games a year. Mm-hmm. Matchups don't particularly matter when you're winning 17 games a year. So hopefully, we're in those kind of competitive games, and now we got a chance to really hash out some lineup issues and all the kind of minutia that you get into with really good teams.
Thank you, sir.
You got it, guys.
Always.
Anytime.
Yeah, we'll have you on again soon. I know you're pretty busy during the season, but we'll try and get you on during the season at some point,
too. We'll make it happen.
All right. Thank you, sir. Alan Horton joining us, radio voice of your Minnesota Timberwolves. And, going to begin his 11th season as the voice behind the mic for the Wolves.
Veteran leadership in the booth.
Yeah, absolutely. Veteran leadership. Great
I just
stuff
laughed
from
at my own joke. I can't believe it.
But, a lot of talkers there with Alan Horton. We appreciate the time with him joining us. And, a lot of excitement for the Wolves, man. It's things have kind of quieted down, I think, from the free agency standpoint around the league. We still got this Carmelo Anthony situation to figure out in New York. But
I feel like over the next few weeks, some guys will start realizing they'll take some minimum deals and we might see some more action.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Thanks to Alan Horton for joining us this week. Thanks to you for listening. Of course, you can find Raised by Wolves on iTunes. Just search Raised by Wolves. Give us a friendly rating. You can find us at podcast1.com as well. And, of course, 1500ESPN.com. Thanks to Alan Horton again for joining us. Thanks to you for listening. For Derek, I'm Manny. Enjoy the rest of the NBA offseason. We'll talk to you next time.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's Mix and Match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Scented Oils, you'll want to invite everyone over, from book club to the fantasy league, even the in-laws.
It smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Scented Oils are infused with 2 times more natural essential oils versus regular Airwick Scented Oils for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Transform your space with scents like white sage and mahogany or lavender and water lily. Now that's a breath of fresh air, Wick.